Hey everyone, welcome to today's podcast. We're talking about creating a thin and healthy mindset. This is ground zero of mastering your weight. Without the right mindset, it's always going to be a struggle. And right now, you don't have a thin, healthy mindset if you're overweight. You have an overweight mindset. You have an overweight dieter mindset. And so this needs to become part of your strategy, part of your process to get control of your weight. It can't just be about cutting calories because we're always going to live up or down to the mindset we have. It's directing everything. So this has got to be part of your process. And it's easier than you think once we break it down into some pieces. But the first thing to recognize is that most of our behavior is just running on autopilot, right? If you think about being overweight, you're doing everything you can to lower that weight, and yet you stay there. Now, why do you stay there? You stay there because you're consistently eating and behaving the same way. And that's what's keeping your weight at the same thing. So how are you consistently eating and living the same way when you're trying to change it so hard, right? You're doing diets, you're doing everything you can to change it, and yet you still seem stuck at eating and living the same way. This is the power of a mindset. Now, the good news is that this mindset can be shifted. And once you shift it into that of a thin, healthy person, just as automatically you start to eat and live in a way that keeps you at your ideal weight. Just as automatically. And ironically, it's almost just as hard to change that. It's a little easier to go up than it is to go down, but the mindset ultimately is what's dictating your weight. And so there's basically six categories in my world that influence your mindset, six components of a mindset. The first one is motivation. What's your motivation for losing weight in the first place? If you just want to look better, that's a diet or overweight mindset right there. A thin and healthy mindset for motivation is that I want to be better. I want to feel better. I want to be the best version of myself possible. My weight is just one piece of that. But for me to operate at an optimal level, I need to nourish myself, live a healthy lifestyle. And my body, my weight are just one side effect of that. The next step is your self-image, how you identify. So if you've been struggling with your weight for a long time, it's normal to identify, have the identity of an overweight person who struggles with their weight. But when you start using different strategies and you start thinking of yourself as a thin, healthy person, and you can start doing this instantly just by imagining, who am I? If I was thin and healthy the way I want to be, how would that feel? What would I be like? So the more you start to nurture this new self-image, the more it starts to take hold and starts to grow. The next step is habits, the habits you have. So right now, you have habits of an overweight person, most likely, if you're struggling with your weight, the way you eat, the way you think about food, the way you live your life, all what you're doing on autopilot is keeping you overweight. And so we want to create the habits of a thin and healthy person. And unfortunately, if you're impatient, this does take a little bit of time because we're looking to automate this process. That's why we use habits so intensely, because once you get the right habits in, they run on autopilot. So that's the third piece. The next step is emotions. How are you going to deal with your emotions? If you're overweight, there's a good chance that you're using food as one of your main emotional management strategies. And so if you want to be thin and healthy, you need to learn how to deal with your emotions on a genuine level. How do I feel the emotions I want to feel? And how do I deal with the unpleasant emotions I don't want to feel in a genuine way? The next step is literally just thinking. What questions are you asking yourself? How do you think about foods? What are you saying to yourself all day long? And I'll tell you one big distinction. If you have an overweight mindset, a lot of times your mind is obsessed with problems. And the problems show up with questions like this. What's wrong with me? How come I can't get to my goal weight? How come I can't stick to a plan? Why can't I eat right? And you're so obsessed in trying to understand the problem that you don't realize you're literally manifesting the problem by focusing on it so much. And so the alternative of a thin, healthy mindset is to start focusing on solutions. How can I eat healthier, more effectively in an easy way? How can I get my weight down comfortably? How can I make my weight mastery automatic so I don't have to think about it much? When you start asking questions like this, you start generating new strategies and it changes everything. And the final piece is maintenance, really understanding how to maintain, not just once you get to your goal weight, but how do you maintain in the beginning? How do you get through times of stress? How do you get through discouragement? How do you get through times when the scale doesn't do what you want it to do? And so a lot of people, when they're overweight with an overweight mindset, a little bit of discouragement totally knocks them off track. They're very conditional. They're very wobbly in terms of their maintenance abilities. And so a thin and healthy person doesn't give a shit. They can have a day where the scale goes up and they're still on track. And so all of these things put together give you the mindset that's going to allow you to achieve your goal in a much more effective way possible. And it's not just to lose weight, it's to live at your goal weight. But in order to do that, you have got to transform your mindset. And so if you want to go deeper into this concept, again, you can go to the bio, the link in my bio, or go to Program Yourself, then sign up for the hypnosis session and watch the video I give you, because I take you through this process in more depth. Because once you change your mindset, you are going to change your body. So if anyone has any questions, feel free to ask them. We'll get into it. Happy Wednesday to everyone. Let's get this camera set up. All right, it's getting smoother. Smoother with the old multiple cameras here. What's up, Betty? Spokane, Washington. All right. Or is it Spokane? I just got a lesson on this not long ago. I was saying it wrong, right? So it's Spokane, I believe. I was quickly corrected. I'm from Massachusetts. It looks like Spokane to me, but it's Spokane. I know it. So is everyone doing it? Let's see. What's up, Tabby? How you doing? I'm feeling great today because I feel like I'm zoomed in on myself, and that's freaking me out. So let me see if I can. No. I guess there's no change in the zoom once it starts. Oh, there we go. All right, there we go. Good Lord. It's like too close to me. Oh, this is a little close too, but that one's not going to change. I'm going to leave that one alone. I'm going to mess with that one. But yeah, feeling great. Get ready to go away for a couple days. So I can't wait. That's going to be nice. Been busy times. Tabby says, so I'm currently still in my calorie deficit, but now I see that my weight goes 149 to 147 to 148. Why? Great question. Yeah, this is a big thing, and it's frustrating. And I think this is a little bit of reality and a little bit of false expectations. You know, we're with the diet industry, we're constantly kind of given this idea that our weight loss success is just a straight line down to our goal weight. And unfortunately, that's just not the case. And I think, again, the expectation piece of that is that it's overstated. Every diet marketing is really about how quickly you can lose weight. And, how predictably and automatic it's going to be if you do whatever diet plan it is. But it rarely is that way. You know, bodies are very, very complicated. They kind of make it seem like our weight loss is like a bank account, credits and debits, when in reality, it's much more like the stock market. There's just a lot of different factors influencing things. So we have to recognize that going into it. You know, that's the reality of the situation, that weight loss is inconsistent, unpredictable in the short term. It just is. And, again, I always mention this, that you look at when they do weight loss studies, they put people in metabolic labs and they're tracking these people's calories exactly the same. But the discrepancy in weight loss is crazy. And it's very important, though. And I think a lot of people don't think about that. Calorie counters buy into this stuff, right? So you do a calorie counter, a calculator, and what you expect to lose and what time and all the rest of it. I feel that's like a recipe for a disaster, because the chances of it matching up with that calculator are so rare for a number of reasons. And so again, women, sometimes different times of the month, different hormonal issues can stall weight loss or make it happen all of a sudden. So what I'm trying to say is it's very inconsistent, unpredictable in the short term, but in the long term, your weight is very predictable and consistent. It's based on how many calories you consume. But in the short term, it's not. So yeah, Tabby, it's frustrating. I get it. But again, I like to think of, you know, times when you're hitting plateaus, times when you're taking a lot of action, not getting the results you expect. I like those times because it allows you to, steal your resolve. You know, how serious are you about this? You know, I'm going to give you my theory on this, and I have no science to back this up, but I'm going to share it anyways, because I've just seen it over and over and over again. I've been doing this for 20 years, and I've done almost 6,000 private weight loss. I've been doing this for a long time. And I noticed this thing. And again, I cannot explain this scientifically. So I'm going to go into kind of like woo-woo land here, but I just seen it and I don't explain it, that I will see people start the plan and it's kind of like, okay, I'll do this. Let's see what the weight loss is. And the weight loss doesn't happen sometimes, right? Month, 2 months, no weight loss. And I'll talk to them. I'll say, well, what's going on? They say, well, I've changed everything. I'm eating less. I'm eating healthier. I'm working out. I'm sleeping better. I'm doing everything that we talked about, but the weight loss isn't showing up. And I say, okay, well, other than the weight loss, do you feel any better? You feel any different? Yes, I'm feeling better. I've got more energy. You know, my clothes are fitting better, blah, 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 all this stuff. That's great. And I say, so what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Are you going to, you know, you haven't lost the weight that you expected. So are you going to quit now and just go back to what you're doing? Or are you going to keep walking this path and see what happens? Here's your choice. And people choose different things, okay? But the people that continue to go on, the people that choose, you know what? I'm frustrated. I wish I'd lost more weight, but I do feel a lot better. And I do believe the weight is going to come off. And they keep going. And I swear, magically, like it is like right after that decision, the weight starts falling off. Now, how can I explain this? Is it possible? Is it possible for a couple of months that a belief, you know what I mean, that I'm not going to lose the weight or it's not happening can actually prevent the weight loss? Like, it doesn't make any sense, but I've just seen it so often that once someone really just accepts, I don't give a shit. I don't care about the weight anymore. This is how I'm going to live. This is what I'm going to do. I feel a lot better. And then sometimes the weight just starts falling off. It's just more complicated. I wish I had a better explanation for you. I don't like to just talk in anecdotal things, but I've just seen it so many times that once someone becomes unconditional, they say, I don't give a shit. I don't care about the weight anymore. I feel better. I'm after it. I want to lose the weight. I'm going to keep walking this path. That's when the results start showing up. So, you know, just stick with it, Tabby. And that's how it is. And just one more thing I want to put in your head is that, again, we're always looking to lengthen our time frame, you know? So again, this comes down to cognitive biases, planning fallacy, and we underestimate things and overestimate things all the time. We're not good at being aware. And so we go into our weight loss thing, we do some drastic, dramatic changes. And as soon as you drastically change things, you know, you cut your calories way down, you clean up your eating a lot, you clean up your lifestyle. As soon as you do that, it takes a lot of mental energy and you experience a time distortion so that a month or a week starts to feel like a month starts to feel like 3 months. And it starts to, you expect more weight loss results than you're getting. And a lot of times we overestimate what we're doing. You know, we overestimate how many calories we've cut. And so this is a bad combination. We overestimate all the work we're doing and we underestimate how long it's been. And again, we've got to pay attention to this stuff because there's a lot of psychological factors that are impacting your motivation and your ability to keep on moving forward. Underestimating, overestimating are a big part of that. And the planning fallacy of just expecting that it's going to be the straight line of success. It's not. It never is because life's not a straight line. You know what I mean? Like you're doing this, you're cleaning up your eating and you're attempting to lose weight within the context of your life. And your life is always all over the place. I mean, there's always stresses and different stuff that's going on that's impacting it. Thank you, Julia. Appreciate the rose. So yeah. So I know that's not the most satisfying answer. I know it's not what you want to hear, but it's just what I've seen and it's the truth. And if you continue, I've never, ever, never, not one time seen someone consistently like 6 months, a year, improve their eating and their lifestyle, not lose weight. So take that for what it's worth. But I get it. It is frustrating. Clearly. We want just weight loss to be so much easier if it was like the calorie calculators, you know, like if it was like that predictable in the beginning, like, okay, I'm doing this, I'm getting this result. But it's not. And I'll tell you what else is like that, you know, is business. Like if you run your own business, you know, that's why for me, my weight mastery and running a business, they're hand in hand, like psychologically, there's so many parallels to them. And one of the big ones is when you run a business, like, you know, you start it and you do all the work. You don't just, your reward isn't equal to the work you put in the beginning, right? When you start a business, you put a ton of work in and you get very little back at first. And it's that way for a while. It's very inconsistent. It's not a one-to-one thing. And weight loss isn't either. And so there's part of the process of just accepting that. Tough shit. Again, it's reality. You've been, you know, well, all the diets, you're always conditioned to think like, oh, I'll just do this and lose the weight rapidly. But that's bullshit most of the time. And then there's reality of how your body is. You know, some people lose weight quick, some lose weight slowly. There's just all sorts of factors. And so what you do is you utilize that to get yourself to a rock solid mindset where you get to the point, again, the magic phrase in my world that deals with that is, I don't give a shit. I don't care. I don't care if I don't even lose weight for a year. I'm going to master this. And I know I'm going to lose weight. If I cut my calories down by a third, I know I'm going to lose weight eventually. I have to. I have a human physical body in a physical world. It's very unusual for a person to cut their calories down by a third and not lose weight. How does that work? You would have to have some oddly functioning body. Okay. What's up, Karen? Hope you're having a great time on your trip. I am going to have a great time on my trip. And I don't even care because I actually have been planning on going away. My wife and I, just a little mini vacation, but we've been planning this for the last couple of weeks. But every time we're going to go somewhere, literally every time we go, it's it's always raining the 2 days, and then there's like 80 mile an hour gusts of wind. Like, I'm not doing that. And so I don't even care tomorrow, though, where we're going. And it looks like it's going to be fine, so I'm excited, but I don't even care. Just looking to get away for a little bit. It's been busy times over here. So, but thank you for saying that. Let's see. So if you have any questions, feel free to ask them. I've been being patient because this is something that I'm truly putting my heart and no weird diets involved. Yeah, great job, Tabby. That's what I mean. It's like, it's an opportunity, is what I will say. And again, this is just straight up utilization. We take the good, we take the bad. You take them both, and there you have the facts of life. you take the bad stuff, and you don't run away from it, and you don't have knee-jerk emotional reactions. You do it first. You know what I mean? Like, I get that at first. You know, something happens and you get triggered and you go through that, fine, okay? But then you come back and it's always the same thing. And I always say the question I would ask myself a million times, do I even want to lose weight? Is this really important to me? And so when I hit plateaus, when I hit frustrating spots, I go through the emotions and then I come back and say, am I going to keep going or am I going to quit? I like to put that question front and center in front of me. And because I always have the choice, I can always quit and I can always keep going. And I just keep reinforcing, I'm going to keep going. And that process, doing it thousands of times, I'm going to keep going. Every time I did that, I reinforced why I want to keep doing it. And it became more and more meaningful every time. It always became more and more meaningful, not just about losing weight. I want to be healthier. I want to live longer. I feel better. I sleep better. I have more energy. I can run my business better. I'm a better dad. I'm a better husband. Blah, 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 blah. All these reasons why. So again, the setbacks are not a problem, folks, if you learn from them and get stronger from them. You're going to experience them. So the question is, how are you going to respond to it? That's the big question. So I love this, Tabby. I'm being patient. I want thing that's wonderful. So you hit this frustrating patch and you've looked at it and you say, I'm going to be patient. This is a one-time thing. I want to master this. I'm going to stick with it. I can't master it if I quit again. I can't repeat the cycle again. I'm going to stay with it. It's frustrating, but I'm going to stay with it. And I'm going to end up on the other side a better person. I know I am. Even if I don't lose weight, I'm going to end up being a better person. And that, I will tell you, that belief is one of the most rock solid core beliefs you can have. You should really ask that. You know, even if I don't lose weight, would I still do this? It's like, nah, I just want to lose weight. Good luck. Good luck. That's a low level motivation. If you can't identify all the other benefits, I was joking when I said about earlier, like I get clients all the time, they'll make all these changes and I'll say, okay, what have you noticed? What positive benefits have you gotten from all these changes you made? Oh, I have more energy. I'm sleeping better. I feel more balanced in my moods. I'm happier. I'm a better parent. I'm better. This is better. I'm doing better at work. I feel more calm and relaxed. And they're going on and on and on, but I'm not losing any weight. So I'm frustrated. And I don't know if I'm going to keep going. It's like, did you just hear what you said? What about all those benefits? Like, you're just going to give those up because you're not losing weight right away, you know? And so I will tell you, if you can get yourself to the point where it's almost like, I don't even give a shit if I lose weight, I feel amazing. That's a magical place to be. I know it's not easy to do. I recognize that. But if you can get to that place, it's amazing. What's up, Erica? Did first redo rehearsal after a difficult time last night. Grateful to have a better plan for next time. Exactly. So Erica's in the program and she's using the redo rehearsal technique, which is really, I refer to it as the program yourself in technique, but that's the cornerstone of the program, because what you're doing as a dieter, which is so crazy, is this idea that you think you're going to start tomorrow on Monday. Thanks, Tavi. You're going to start Monday and you're going to be perfect. And you're going to be perfect until you reach your goal. And it's like, wake the fuck up. You're not gonna be perfect. Like, I mean, Jesus. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're an adult. You've tried losing weight hundreds of times, probably. You've never been perfect for very long. So I don't understand this idea that you still think you're gonna be perfect. So once you realize you're not gonna be perfect, now we're in the real world. And now we can start to really move towards the goal. And so the first thing you're gonna do if you're not gonna be perfect is you need to figure out a way to learn from your mistakes. And to learn from them quick, come up with a better plan and get yourself back on track fast. That's the secret to weight loss. And that's the secret ultimately to weight mastery, the ability to get back on track quick. And the redo technique helps you do that. So great job, Erica. And now you start to fear mistakes less, which makes them happen less as well, in addition to having better strategies. So great job, Erica. That's super. Yeah, Tabby says, yeah, it's a new lifestyle I'm falling in love with. Exactly. This is what I'm talking about. You really need to find deeper motivations than just weight loss. Weight loss isn't going to be enough. If weight loss motivation, if wanting to look better was enough motivation, you would have already lost weight, folks. The only reason you're not losing weight, if you're trying to lose weight and you're not, your core problem is you're not even motivated. but you think you are, which makes it the worst, because there's no worse belief in the world than thinking, I want to lose weight more than anything in the world. I do everything I can, and no matter what I do, I can't lose weight. I have never seen that to be true. I don't believe it. And I think it's the most powerless belief and thought you can have. Because if you believe that no matter what you do, and you're doing everything possible and you're not losing weight, then what's the point? There must be something broken in here. There's nothing I can do. I've never seen that be the case. I work with people with menopause, insulin resistant, Hashimoto's, PCOS, all of it. And they always lose weight. So anyways, but I think, yeah, when you fall in love with the lifestyle and how you feel and how it feels to be this version of you, I think that's a much more solid motivation to build on than just wanting to look better. You can want to look better too. You understand? I'm not saying don't want to look better. That's, of course you want to look better, but it's just not enough motivation. If it was, you would already lost the weight. Don't you get that? Doesn't that make sense? It's just weird. Dieters, again, I always say dieters are like little trance monsters. You're just in a trance because that's how you keep doing the same shit over and over, never change anything up, you know? So you gotta look at things in a new way. Were you fat before? I was 50 pounds heavier than I am now and changed. Yeah, really transformed from the inside out into a different version of myself. So, you know, a lot of what I learned from people that had lost weight and kept it off. And it was so transformative for me that, you know, I always say this, like, I had a degree in finance and investments. You know, I was in business school. And halfway through my schooling, I came across all this stuff. And it was such a transformative experience for me. Not even just the weight, mindset, my behaviors. I was a binge drinker. You know, I was emotionally a wreck. I was in a tough spot. And learning all these things that I share with you guys it just completely turned my life around, so much so that, again, I stepped away from finance and went into being initially a hypnotist. And then, you know, I work primarily with weight mastery. So that's my focus. But, you know, that was a difficult shift to make back in the day. My mom wasn't very happy about it, you know, but yeah, so I'm very passionate about this. Erica says, I'm also rehearsing how to handle dinner out with friends tonight, taking my power back. Yeah, there you go, Erica. You're going to be amazed. You're going to be absolutely amazed at how different it is when you rehearse the way you want to be. And to recognize too, like, it's also helpful sometimes during that process to realize that you are always rehearsing what you didn't want to do. How about this, folks? You know, we always do what we did, right? We live our lives on autopilot. We're not always mindful, consciously making the best decision every moment. We're basically just doing what we did. So a lot of your unhealthy eating habits are just habits now. You just do them. And so let's just say you're going to a restaurant where you always overeat. When you go to the restaurant, even before you go to the restaurant, you're anticipating, expecting you're going to overeat because you're referencing your previous times there. And so you're not imagining, and you're feeling stressed about it. You're like, oh my God, I don't want to go there. I don't want to overeat. But you never take a second to think, what would it be like if I went there calm, relaxed, feeling empowered, feeling like the person I want to be? How do I want to go there and eat? How do I want to feel? You never ask that question. Never, never, ever. You never ask that question. And it's crazy. That's what I'm always surprised with. Like, what I do, I work with very smart, intelligent, successful people. And it's just crazy that no one ever just like spontaneously asks these questions. And a lot of it's because you've been conditioned by the diet industry to think ineffectively, put it that way. Tips for late night eating. Yeah, tips for late night eating. The secret of late night eating is, I always say this, that where the problem shows up is not where the problem was created. So a lot of times when it comes to late night eating, the problem is less about you not having enough willpower at night to stop yourself from eating. And it's more about what you did earlier in the day before that moment. And so the classic dieter move is to say, okay, I'm going to skip breakfast, lunch, I'm kind of hungry, I'm going to put it off because I can cut more calories out. And then you get to afternoon, and you're absolutely starving. And now you can't control your eating. And now you're binge eating. So a lot of times, programming yourself then is really a preventative approach. We don't want to just deal with when you're starving and stop yourself from late night eating. We want to make it so that when the late night comes, you're satisfied, you're comfortable, and you're in a position to easily, you know, not eat at all or do whatever you want to do, however you want to eat or not eat. So yeah, that's kind of the secret, is to start looking at what's going on earlier in the day and set yourself up for success. Because I see a lot of people not setting themselves up for success. They're literally selling themselves up for failure. There's no worse strategy than trying not to eat for as long as you can. The fucking dumbest strategy by a mile. So if you're doing that, please stop it. It's stupid. It's literally, it's the great strategy to get yourself to overeat and never lose the weight. Over-restricting leads to overeating. Do you not believe that? You know? So again, I don't know what your situation is, Julia, with what's going on by the time you get to late night eating. But again, a very common pattern I see is that, you know, it's what you're doing before is more important. Okay. And then they're setting yourself up for success, even late night eating. So Christo says, thoughts on fasting and correlations with heart disease. I have seen that study, and I'm not a fasting expert, so I don't pay attention too much to that world. I think fasting in general is, you know, just like all the diets, it's always served as this one size fits all solution. And I don't think it is, even though I do a form of intermittent fasting, but I don't call it that. I came up with this 30 years ago. So I just kind of, it just kind of spontaneously, most of the stuff I do, I kind of learned from people that have successfully lost weight and kept it off, and, or I just discovered it on my own. And so I would say the last 20 years, most of it I've discovered on my own. Obviously, I speak with a lot of people about this stuff, and I, you know, accumulate strategies. But the fasting, I think, is I don't understand how intermittent fasting would correlate with heart disease. I can't understand the mechanism behind it. I have seen, now the people I've seen are intermittent fasting proponents, and so they're saying that the science on that was a little shaky. So I'm not an expert on that, though. I wouldn't know. My intuition is I can't understand what intermittent fasting, how that would negatively impact your heart health. But, you know, I'm not a scientist either, so who knows? So yeah, I'm the wrong person to ask for that, unfortunately. I'm not an expert in that one. Do you have any tips on not getting attached to people so easily? Oh, that's interesting. Not getting attached to people so easily. Now, so, you know, this is interesting, though, because I think what this brings up for me is that a lot of times the weight stuff really is not about the weight. You know, so often the eating and the weight related issues aren't really about, they're symptoms of a deeper issue. And so a lot of times, like if you listen to my coaching calls, a lot of it is really not about like what you're eating or food at all. It's usually about deeper stuff, you know, very, very common. Sometimes it's just about the eating too, but a lot of times it's something deeper. So yeah, getting attached to people so easily, I think, I'm going to give you my take on it, take it or leave it. And I hate just giving like a one thing, because what I ideally like to do is I like working with people. I like getting to know what their situation is, and I like to understand the context. You know, how is this situation showing up in context? Context is extremely important understanding things. So I'm going to kind of just generalize things because I don't know your specific situation. But, you know, tips on getting attached to people so easily. If we're getting attached to people so easily, the first thing I'm looking at is, you know, maybe it's a self-esteem issue, or you don't feel your own self-worth enough. And so I think I do deal with this in the program, because in Program Yourself Thin, the goal really isn't just to lose weight. The goal is to become the best version of yourself possible. So we take the weight loss rapid and personal development. So it's really about who's the best version of me possible. And when you start with that question, not how do I not get attached to people so easily, but more who do I want to be? How do I want to relate to people? See, because right now, this is why I like context, because, you know, you're saying, how do I not get attached to people so easily? So I'm thinking, you know, situations might not projecting them onto you. I may or may not be right. I don't know if you're thinking, I don't even know if you're male, female, or, you know, something else. I don't know how you identify. I don't know if you're thinking about some boy you get attached to, some girl you get attached to, some friend you get attached to, you know what I mean? So I don't know the context. So that makes it hard to answer this. However, the one thing I can always say is that when you focus on being the best version of yourself possible, well, now all of a sudden, even in your own mind, without knowing what this context is, you're thinking about how you want to be. And so notice that you frame the question initially in what you don't want to be, which was unhelpful, because your subconscious mind doesn't understand negatives. I tell you not to think about a banana. Stop thinking about a banana. Don't think about a banana. You're thinking about a banana. And so when you say tips for not getting attached to people so easily, you're imagining yourself getting attached to people easily, being the type of person that gets attached to people easily. So I don't want to think in that way. I want you to think, who do you want to be? How do you want to get attached to people? in a more, it would be the opposite, easily, not difficult, but in a more healthier way, let's just say, right? But you in your mind have some definition of a better way to get attached to people, obviously. And so I want to start articulating the goal in terms of what you actually want, not in terms of what you don't want. And so this applies to everyone in every way. We tend to articulate our problems, you know, and what, how do I lose weight? How do I not get attached to people? How do I stop overeating? All of those are the problems though. And what I like to do, it's magical too, like, cause we don't do this naturally, is I like to articulate the problem in terms of solutions. How do you want to eat? How do you want to get attached to people? You know, how do you want to lose weight or whatever you want to do? So I like to ask what you want to do, and it starts to clarify things, and it starts to open up new neural pathways in your mind. Because if we just talk about how not getting attached to people so easily, it's all based around you getting attached to people easily. So again, I begin asking a question to yourself: how do I want to get attached to people? Who do I want to be? What kind of relationships do I want to have? And now you're starting to generate what you actually want, and you're giving your subconscious mind a much clearer direction of where to go. I hope that makes some sense and helps a little. Heather says, yeah, the OT was never published. Yeah, maybe that's what I was reading. Yeah, that it was, again, I don't know about that intermittent fasting heart study. I got to look into that a little bit more because I've seen on the peripheral of me. But I'm not a big proponent of intermittent fasting, even though I use it, because I just think most people, well, listen, intermittent fasting for some people is going to be amazing. They're going to do it and it's going to be like a duck to water. Just, this is perfect. And there's going to be a lot of people that try it and it doesn't resonate with them. You know, it reminds me, and I'm going to mess up the numbers now, but there's a weight registry study. If you don't know about this, you really ought to know, because it's a big database of people that have successfully lost, I think, more than 30 pounds and kept it off for, I think, at least 2 years. And so this is right up my alley. This is what Program Yourself is built on before I even knew about this. And so it basically, it surveys them and asks them questions like, do you eat breakfast? Do you weigh yourself every day? Do you journal? Just different stuff like that. And so, you know, you get a statistic for, I guess, best practices. And so again, I'm blanking on the number, but I think it's 60 or 82% of the two numbers popping in my head, but it was the majority ate breakfast every day. Okay. And so now I'm thinking it's 82%, but that means like 18% don't and are succeeding. So I always say, like, there's no right or wrong. There's only what works for you, but there are also best practices. And so when it comes to intermittent fasting, I kind of notice those numbers. It seems like about 20% of people, it's just like, it really fits them great. And I find a lot of people trying to force themselves to intermittent fast and it doesn't fit them great. And they just keep trying to force themselves to do it. We had a new client yesterday was in the group, and she was talking about how she intermittent fasted, I think she said, for 2 years. And for 2 years, you know, she was constantly starving in the morning. So, you know, again, we all got different bodies and different situations. So you have to really, you know, base everything around how your body responds, you know, not what some expert says is the right way to do it. So anyways, though, but I want to look at that study more because I don't understand what that'd be. What's up, Don? Maybe late for the call today. Okay. Yeah, we'll be there till 4:00. I got to get off at 4:00 today on that call, though. It was a report focusing on 2-day questionnaire on what they ate during their feeding window. Yeah, okay, that's kind of mapping up with what I saw. It just seemed like it wasn't a very well thought out study. And, you know, the lesson here, I can't speak to that study so much, but what I will say is that I'm not a scientist in any way, but I have gotten somewhat literate in figuring out which studies are worth something and which ones aren't. And so starting to get better at kind of sifting through the bullshit, what's real and what's not, to some degree, is very useful because we're surrounded by bullshit. You know, it's the information age. I was, you know, we thought it was going to be like, oh, the good information we're going to have access to. Turns out we just have access to all the information. And so you can pretty much believe anything you want at this point and have, you know, pretty reputable people behind it and studies and all the evidence you need for everything. You know, everything. I mean, there's people out there, you know, trying to be keto because they think that's the healthiest thing. You know, and then there's other people who think that, you know, a diet high in saturated fat is very dangerous. So, you know, you can believe whatever you want at this point in time, you know, in 2024. So, you know, becoming a little bit scientifically, you know, looking at these studies and having some ability to kind of look deeper in them and see if they're reputable or not, I think is really, really helpful and valuable at this point in history, you know, and in time. But yeah. And again, I don't know. I don't know why. I think intermittent fasting, I think having windows of time where you're not eating, I think just intuitively just makes so much sense because that's how we live for millions of years. You know, we evolved in a food scarce environment. And the idea that cutting down your food intake and having windows where you weren't eating would have a negative health impact just makes no sense to me. But, you know, I guess that's science too, right? Is that things that are nonsensical at one point, that we discover them and then understand them more. So, but my initial response is that that's probably bullshit. Probably. Because I don't see how cutting food down would help with that. But then again, you know, it's like that. I will tell you this, conspiracy wise, you know, what's going on in the modern day we live in, to really understand it, because it's hard to see because we're in it right now, is that we're living, to get some perspective on it, the way we're living with food is the same way we were living with cigarettes in the 1950s. And so cigarettes were very popular in the 1950s, and most people didn't really understand the health implications of the cigarettes, right? They may not know that they were great, but they didn't know they were causing lung cancer. And even though that evidence was already out there, you know, I was saying this last week, that the first anti-smoking campaign was by the Nazis. They wanted, you know, they didn't want their citizens to smoke. And so the evidence was out there, but it didn't really get mainstream until the 70s. But it was out there, and why it didn't get mainstream is because the cigarette industry would sit on the studies. They would put extra studies out. They would confuse people. There was all their marketing they were doing, and you couldn't really see straight. And so the same thing is going on with food right now, that we are constantly being conditioned to minimize the damaging effects these foods have on us. Never mind the weight piece, even just the negative effects it has on us physically, mentally, emotionally. And these food companies are sitting on the science. They are funding scientific studies that confuse us. The best example I've heard of this is that it's kind of like you have a puzzle box, right? You're putting 1,000-piece puzzle together, and they're making another 200 pieces that look like it could be part of it but don't fit. And so it's very confusing. And so the food industry is constantly trying to confuse us with this stuff. Food industry, by the way, the food industry is really the cigarette industry, is a much more accurate way to think about it. Like, and I mean literally, like RJR Reynolds and Nabisco are merged. They're the same company. The parent company of Kraft is Philip Morris. And so in the 70s, they saw the writing on the wall eventually, that the science was coming out, and they divested from cigarettes, went into food, and they brought the same philosophy to create the most addictive products possible, use the most aggressive marketing possible, and to sit on the science and confuse us with science as much as possible. And they're doing it right now. And what I say is that within 20 years, I can almost guarantee there will be warning labels on food, just like there are in cigarettes. And it's up to you, though. Are you going to wait 20 more years and keep pumping this shit in your body, or are you going to realize it now? You've got to take it upon yourself, because no one's looking out for you, just so you know. There's no government agency looking out for you. There's certainly no private agency looking out for you. You are on your own, and it's a war zone out there. You know, these companies have enormous resources to convince you and persuade you to eat their bullshit and poison yourself and make yourself sick. There's a lot of money being made off you being overweight, unhealthy, and unhappy. And that's just what it is. And so, you know, it's up to you to decide how you're going to respond to it. If you're going to start a diet, I'd say think twice about that, because all the diets that you think of are all owned by big food companies too. So Weight Watchers was owned by Heinz. Jenny Craig was owned by Nestle. Atkins Food Products, owned by the same company that owns Carvel and Cinnabon. Slim Fast, owned by the same company as Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream. If those diets actually worked in any way to help you with your weight, don't you think they would not want to put those diets out into the world? They're never going to buy Program Yourself then and blast that out to the world. So just something to think about, I guess. What they're doing is they get you coming and going and then fill your head with rocks when you try and lose weight. Good job, Astrid. I can't wait to hear about that dog walking. Jody says maybe it's the raising of your cortisol that they are saying isn't optimal for health. Yeah, maybe. And I that's shocking to me. It's shocking to me that you would raise your cortisol even when you're not eating, you know, for a relatively short amount of fast. But, you know, again, I'm not a scientist, so who knows? But I'll be interested to look into that. Who knows? You never know. I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, I never believe studies anymore when I first hear them. Because, again, what they do, the food industry is behind a lot of these bullshit studies. You know, so right now, keto, intermittent fasting are the two most popular diets, which is a sad state of affairs, because keto is fucking as goofy as you can get. You know, so it goes both ways, by the way. You know what I mean? Like, it goes both ways. Why do you love keto? Why do you love keto? Do you think it has anything to do with the fact of how big the beef industry is and the fact that it's a meat heavy, protein heavy diet? Do you think that might have anything to do with the fact that that's a number one diet? Because it's fucking goofy. I'm not saying you won't lose weight. I'm not saying some people won't have healthy markers on that diet. What I'm saying is, how many times have you tried it and you hate doing it? So why would you try and force yourself to do something you hate? It's because you're convinced that's the only way to lose weight. I get it. But, you know, and the other one's intermittent fasting right now. So who knows? You know, maybe the food industry put together some dumb study just to say, oh, it causes heart disease. That it doesn't matter. I think we know this. At this point in time, it really doesn't matter what the study, how it was conducted, whether it's legit or not, because the only thing that matters is the headlines and how it gets, and we're talking about it now, you know? And is it a real study? Is it real or not? You know, but that's happening constantly with everything. So it's a war zone out there. It's tough. It is tough to get your head straight in this day and age. No doubt about it. I'm thankful. So thankful I started this journey 30 years ago. You know, I'm able to see the bullshit a lot clearer now, but it makes it confusing. You know, what do you recommend for when you're sleep deprived, can't nap, take it as a rest day or light exercise? Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, if I was sleep deprived, like legit, and I don't know why you can't nap, because I assumed can't nap was like a time factor, but then you're talking about exercising. I would, and I have done this, I was majorly sleep deprived years ago. And what I did is I made sleep my number one focus. And I'm very fortunate. I work for myself, so I was able to take more naps. But I find that most people, now I'm not saying this, you might be an outlier, but I find the vast majority of people absolutely have the opportunity to sleep more. They're just not utilizing it. So I'm just going to be frank about that. You can go to bed earlier, you can stop with the phone and the screens and the bullshit, get some more sleep. That being said, I think sleep is the most important aspect of mastering your weight and your health, period. And I put it before even the food because it's going to affect the food. You know, you come see me after a shitty night of sleep and let me know how you're eating. And then get a good night of sleep and notice how you're eating. It makes all the difference in the world for so many reasons. The sleep is just so huge. So me personally, like if I was sleep deprived, I would put sleep and napping in front of exercising. I would put it ahead of all else. And again, that's one regret I have. Knowing what I know now, that is one thing absolutely. If I relived my life over again, that would be the biggest difference, is that I would get more sleep and I would value it more. And my sleep deprivation, you know, I had shitty sleep patterns. I mean, it's funny, everything's relative, you know, so now my sleep's crazy good. But there was years, I mean, especially when I was running my business and when my kid was just born and that whole thing, but I'd be working till 2 a.m, get up at 7, 8 o'clock, start working again, you know? And then my second kid happened and he was a bad sleeper. So then I wasn't getting like a good night of sleep when I actually did sleep. And then I was getting up throughout the night and just, it was hard to sleep and stack it together. But what I did is I would stay up later than I had to. I would have gone to bed earlier. And yeah, the sleep really is just so crucial. Why We Sleep is a great book. Michael Walker. I think that's such a super book about sleep. But yeah, I'd put it above all else. And I would focus on that. As Monty says, help with binging. I need a hypnosis. Yeah. I said, you always speak the truth. Yeah. Again, right. You got more times to sleep. It doesn't take a lot though. You know what I mean? So it's not like you have to like, but it's hard. It's hard to get to sleep because this is what I was referring to just a minute ago. Like when I had my son, it wasn't just my son either. We moved into a house and we're redoing the whole thing and running a business. And my son was born, you know, my daughter still, you know what I mean? So I always said having two kids was the 1-2 punch, that I was not ready for that. But the two punch, my son was not a great sleeper. And so that was something I was completely unprepared for because my daughter had been a great sleeper and there was just one of her. And so that was extremely challenging and difficult. And what ended up happening though, is that you'd be like, oh my God, okay, the day's over, right? So say it's 8 o'clock, both kids are finally sleeping. And so now it's like, oh, finally some me time. And so now like watching Netflix and just zoning out felt like such valuable time that I didn't want to cut into it by going to bed. That's the big difference I would have made. And so, yeah, we usually have more time to sleep than we think and we're wasting it. You know, we get caught up on the screen. And as soon as we're on the screen, we experience time distortion, you know, the phone or the TV or the computer. It's like all of a sudden time's passing fast. And that's all time you could have, you know, been sleeping or doing other stuff. It's easy. It's easy to spend 3, 4, 5, 8 hours on a screen, you know? So it's important to look at that too. But as Monty says, help with binging, I need a hypnosis. You know, hypnosis in and of itself probably isn't going to fix that. You know, I always think of hypnosis much more as a supplement to what you're doing. It certainly can help in the short term, no doubt about it. But to really resolve the binging, I think it takes a bit of work. It's funny, I'm reading this. I don't know if Jody's still here, but Jody had recommended Brain Over Binge, which I think is very interesting. And I think it's a great book so far. And I'm excited. I just bought the book that she references in that. I think it's called, is it Practical Recovery? Maybe. But it looks really interesting. But I love stuff like that because it's a kind of a contrarian way of approaching addiction and stuff. So I love stuff like that. So yeah, so binging, you know, the initial stuff I talk with binging is to understand what's triggering it. You know, usually binging happens in patterns. And so usually there's, you know, you're really hungry. You've been over restricting, now you're really hungry, and that leads to the binge. There's emotions that you don't want to deal with, can't deal with, that you're using the food as a way to distract yourself from it, you know, and, or it's just a habit, you know, it's just a habit that you've developed. And so it's usually one of those three. So the secret, I think, of resolving binges is to really start to stalk them, to understand them, become aware of them, understand the patterns. You might have different binge behaviors. You know, you might wipe one binge behavior that's triggered when you're anxious, another binge behavior that triggers because it's Friday night and that's what I do, and another one that triggers because, you know, it was Monday and you over-restricted all day and now you're binging. So again, I think the first step is to understand the binge. When is it happening? What's showing up? And start to notice if there's some patterns to it, and then go to work on finding solutions to it. You know, but how are you going to find a solution? There's no one-size-fits-all solution, you know? You go to the doctors with an illness, so the first thing I know is, what's the illness? So again, binging is the same way. Just because you binge, there's a lot of different types of binging. And I think understanding it is going to make it more okay, so you're saying it's emotional binging. So yeah, I think the emotional binging, I'd want to know, you know, what's going on with it, what emotions. I would like to know, is it anxiety, is it stress, is it depression, is it loneliness, what's going on there emotionally, you know, how often is it happening, these things here. And then I go to work on resolving it, and again, that's definitely something I like to coach someone through. But to resolve it yourself, I mean, the simplest thing I give people to work through it on their own is the redo rehearsal technique, because I think that helps you get more perspective on it and helps you generate solutions to that problem. So, but yeah, but again, just start paying attention to it first. I think that's the first thing. Kelly says, I print a monthly calendar to write what days I'm doing certain workouts, also track weight there. Yeah, that's great, Kelly. Yeah. Yeah, I think printing out monthly calendars and tracking it that way is wonderful. I think that's helpful, you know. Anything you have more anchors, I think it sets you up for more success. So I think that's a great strategy. As mine says, stress and loneliness. Yeah, stress and loneliness. Okay, well, so here's what I would do. And, you know, that's what I was reading in this book. I mean, she was saying, but she was using therapy too. I mean, the therapy model is, I don't know, you know, and that's why I don't do therapy. You know, that's why I went into neurolinguistic program and hypnosis. I'm not a huge fan of therapy. Not saying it doesn't have its time and its place, obviously, but I just think that its results are pretty shaky at best a lot of times. So stress and loneliness, just start there, right? So if it's stress, you know, my first question to you is, what techniques and solutions do you have to relax and calm down? What stress management solutions do you have in your life? And if you don't have any, well, great. That's probably an easy win. You know, start developing some stress reduction, relaxation techniques to help you deal with that. And then with the loneliness, again, it becomes, well, I feel lonely. What do you want to feel? Well, I want to feel connected. And I don't know in what way. Maybe you want to hang out with friends. Maybe you want to get into a romantic relationship. Maybe, you know, whatever. Everyone's different. But in terms of loneliness, the question becomes, what do you want to feel? I want to feel connection. What kind of connection? This kind of connection. And then you start, you know, optimizing, okay, how can I make this happen? So I know I'm making it sound simpler than it is. I understand that. But what I'm saying is that we recognize the deeper things going on and work to find solutions to them, you know? And then sometimes it's just a habit. You just link it together, you know, and that's a different, you know, solution as well. So Kelly says, I have revenge, bedtime, procrastination. Need to chart that too. Work on sleeping earlier. Yeah, well, I will tell you this, okay? Revenge, bedtime, procrastination. That's funny though. Revenge, bedtime, What's revenge mean? What's the revenge piece? I get bedtime procrastination. That one I get. And that's what I had to work through. I think everyone does. And I think, you know, just like everything else, the way I see the world, I'm a hypnotist. So I think of the world, conscious, subconscious mind, and that we're mostly on autopilot. So when people are like, oh, I'm going to go to bed earlier. No, you're not. No, you're not. Your bedtime is extremely subconscious. You're an autopilot, especially at night. You have very specific patterns of how you go to bed. And if you go to bed late, you're not just going to decide to go to bed earlier and then just go to bed earlier. Even though it seems like it's that simple, it's not. And so if you struggle with that, let me put your mind at ease. It's not easy to just go to bed earlier. You're basically training yourself to act differently. That's been one of my most recent habits I've been focusing on, is moving my bedtime earlier. And I went from 2 o'clock to midnight for a while. Then I got it to 11, and now I'm at 10. And there's you have to do a lot of inner work. Or I did anyways. I had to do a lot of inner work to do those changes. You know, understanding sleep and sleep patterns and all the rest of it's helpful too. Sleep's so important. I actually have a program called Sleep at Will. I always say this. I have other programs. I just haven't been selling them in years, but I'm gonna redo those and make those available for people. Because it's really, really helpful. But yeah, I get that. The bedtime procrastination, I definitely get. But procrastination, that's what I'm currently working on, personally. That's what I spend most of my time when I do the redo rehearsal, using all the techniques that I talk about in terms of weight loss. I use those on myself. And right now I'm using them a lot on procrastination and just being more productive and efficient at work. And you're never going to believe it, but they work. You know, so again, when you understand how to influence your mind, it really is like a cheat code. It's really, really helpful. So as Maya said, you've been a big influence. My weight loss this year so far, lost 9 kilograms. Take a screenshot of that. Great job, Ismani. That's tremendous. What was super, super, super. And I love, so now, yeah, again, so you get what I'm saying. And so stress and loneliness, I would aim at stress first. That's what I would go with first, because when you're more calm and relaxed, you tend to just make better food choices, you know, and very much, you know, at the least, again, I was thinking about this book, Brain Over Binge, is in my head right now. And, you know, I don't think she was taught calm relaxation. I see that so often for my clients, that, and for me too, the being able to get better at being more calm and relaxed is such an important foundational piece of this process for so many reasons. And one of the big ones is, hey, when you're more calm and relaxed, you just tend to make better choices and you think clear and all that. But then even when you don't, you're more aware of what's going on. You just have more awareness. So yeah, start focusing on, if the stress is a big issue in your life, start focusing on the relaxation. And yeah, I've got hypnosis sessions for that. You can go to YouTube, Jim Katsoulis. I've got a bunch of hypnosis sessions up there. And SoundCloud. If you go to SoundCloud, search SoundCloud and Jim Katsoulis. I think I got like maybe 10 or 15 or 20 hypnosis sessions. They're all different kinds, but any of them are going to help you relax. And there's some specific relaxation ones, but start listening to those and start working on, like focus on your relaxation. Let that be a main focus of you, because it's going to support all your other weight loss efforts. All right. But great job. And I'm glad to have been able to help you. That's awesome. Kelly says, I refuse to sleep earlier because I feel I need that quiet alone time. Yeah, Kelly, that's what I was talking about. So again, I'd never heard that phrase. That's exactly what I'm talking about, is that when my son, when I was really in the middle of that whole thing with the shitty, oh my God, I was exhausted. But yeah, then nighttime came, I felt like this is the only time I have to myself. And that's what I would change. What I think now and know now is getting that extra sleep is just profound. I feel like a superhero. I literally do. The difference between being sleep deprived, and listen, if you're a typical American, you're sleep deprived. There's a great chance you're sleep deprived. If you're a parent, you're sleep deprived, you know? And so I think that getting that back was just amazing. Cause you know, sleep deprivation is literally, it's like being inebriated. It's a state where you can't just like will yourself out of it. It's affecting you in every way, physically, neurologically, psychologically, physiologically, biochemically, hormonally, the way you, your insulin resistance, all of that's impacted by your sleep. So if you're not getting enough of it, it's certainly, you know, it's kind of like, I always use the metaphor, like weight loss for most people feels like a real uphill battle, right? It feels like you're trying to roll this giant boulder up a hill, and it takes every ounce of strength you have to do it, and then it always ends up rolling back down, okay? But what you can do lifestyle-wise kind of controls the mountain size. And so as you start getting more sleep, as you start drinking more water, as you start relaxing more, as you start nourishing yourself, as you start moving more, as you start meditating, as you start feeling gratitude, the mountain starts to turn into a little hill. And now it doesn't take as much effort to roll this, you know, to roll this wheel along. It's a lot easier. So again, I get it. You know, there's always ideals of how we should live. So I'm not trying to put that pressure on you. But what I am saying, that the big thing I learned, what I've been saying this whole time is, if I went back in time, that is absolutely, with my brain now, I would have gone to bed earlier anyways, even if that was my only time. So I'm telling you, that doesn't go away. It stays there. And this idea that this is the great time, I realize now it wasn't. You know, I'm just kind of sitting there. I enjoy watching a show, you know, which, by the way, it's just hypnosis. When we're sitting there watching a show, it's our time. What I know now is I would trade that last hour, 2 hours just zoning out in front of the TV for the 2 hours of sleep and you know, replenishment I get, clarity of mind, energy, focus, all the rest of it. And I just didn't realize that before because I thought about it like you're thinking about it. So I get it. Even your language in Kelly, right? I refuse to sleep earlier because I feel I need that quiet alone time. I get it. Sleeping's quiet alone time too. And it's way more nourishing and regenerative than the TV, you know? So again, I never like to just tell you what to do and why it's better because that doesn't change anything within you. But I totally get it. But you're highlighting the deeper subconscious reason why this is the same thing. This conversation about going to bed earlier is the exact same conversation about eating better. And so this is why I say like the diet industry and the weight loss industry, it's not helping you because they're always just telling you what to do. Go listen to Huberman and listen to how you should sleep. Who gives a shit? Knowing what you should do and being able to do it are two totally different things. And the being able to get yourself to do it is really understanding and resolving a lot of these subconscious issues we have. Again, it's ambivalence is how we would describe this, Kelly. Part of you wants to get more sleep and part of you really values that alone time very highly. And so you got these two wants and one's going to win out more than the other. Okay. But that's the ambivalence and it's subconscious. And so you got ambivalences about everything. And so we need to resolve the ambivalences in order to make you congruent so that you can do the things you want to do. But it's not about just knowing. I could sit here and give you all the facts about why sleeping earlier is better. And it's not going to mean shit to you because in the back of your mind, I don't give a shit. I need my alone time, you know? And so again, it's the way we perceive things though, that ultimately leads to what we do. So yeah, I get where you're at. Erica says, I definitely need your sleep at will program. Well, Erica, you're in the program. You got it. Go to the bonus. If you go in the bonus section, it's there. Okay. So it should be. If it's not, shoot me a message. But Erica, you should have access to the sleep at will program now. And it's awesome because there's sessions in there to help you fall asleep, get you back to sleep if you wake up. And there's a whole training in there, kind of best sleep practices. So Kelly says, may try to switch it up, wake up earlier and have quiet time, then hear the birds in the morning. Kelly, you're, that's a smart move. I think that's really smart. I always say the best way to go to bed earlier is to wake up earlier. You know, get yourself to wake up earlier one day and you're going to find that sleep pressure comes earlier that evening typically. And again, understanding sleep pressure and sleep cycles is really helpful too. Because we tend to have 90-minute sleep cycles. You may notice, I would notice this, that I would start to get really tired around like 8:30, between like 8:30 and 9 o'clock about. I start to feel really, really tired. And then 9:15 and coming out, I start to get this energy again, right? So we have these sleep cycles that are constantly happening about 90 minutes. So understanding those is helpful because you can use those to time when you're going to go to sleep. Because the worst thing you do is you kind of go to sleep like a half hour earlier, right in the middle of when you're waking up, and then you just lay in bed. And you're like, oh, what's the point of this? So working with your body and understanding that does help that as well. Eating cleaner has helped my sleeping. Yep. No more 3 a.m. late nights. Yeah. I got it down to 1 a.m. 3 a.m. late night. Yeah. 3 a.m. late night it's, oh my God. I will tell you something I heard one time, and I don't know if this is real or not. But I just like it because it definitely, supported me in wanting to go to bed earlier. But the guy said that every hour before midnight is equivalent of 2 extra hours of sleep. You know what I mean? So you get double the sleep value every hour before midnight. Now, I haven't heard that from any place else, but I like it because I'm always, as a hypnotist, I'm just looking for reasons and ideas that support my goal. And so I've absorbed that. And I can't explain why. I don't know the reasoning behind it, But whether it's a hypnotic suggestion or reality, I feel that's true. When I get to bed before midnight, well, I get to bed at 10 o'clock. And I'm usually in bed at 10:30. I'll make that clear. Not that it matters to anyone. But when I get to bed earlier, sometimes I'll go to bed at like 9 o'clock, very rarely, but occasionally I will do that. It's a completely different type of sleep. It's just different. And I wake up in a completely different place. What I'm trying to say, basically, if you're a typical American, you know, A, you've had a whole lifetime of a standard American diet, and you've had a whole lifetime of a standard American culture. And part of that culture is that you're sleep deprived, and you're literally, it's like living your whole life compromised, inebriated, not feeling like what you truly can feel like. So, you know, again, I could talk about sleep all day long. I think it's really, really important. What's up, Joy? So, but yeah, just pay attention to it. The more you pay attention to it, but the eating cleaner too. Yeah, that's the biggest thing that impacted my sleep. I used to be the worst sleeper ever. Like really, the first 20 years of my life, I was the worst sleeper. I couldn't fall asleep. And then I slept like shit. I'd toss and turn. I'd sweat all night. I just didn't sleep well. And when I stopped eating at night, it was amazing how quickly and how amazingly my sleep improved. I didn't sweat anymore. I slept much more soundly. I fell asleep quickly. It was nuts. And it makes a lot of sense when you understand digestion and sleep. It makes a lot of sense because digestion uses tons and tons of energy in your body. And so when you eat a bunch of shit before you go to bed, yeah, you can pretty much anticipate you're going to have a shitty night of sleep. Another little thing about sleep you may or may not know, but what triggers sleep is your body temperature drops like about a degree. And this is why if you take a shower before you go to bed, it helps you fall asleep, because you take a hot shower and then all the blood goes to your extremities to cool you down, and you actually lower your core temperature from doing that, and it helps you fall asleep. So if you eat a lot of food before you go to sleep, digestion actually increases your core temperature a degree or two. So again, it fights off that falling asleep process. It you know, usually will harm it. So that's great that you recognize that, Kelly. So again, that's what this is all about, just kind of paying attention to what's going on. And, you know, optimizing it, making it better and better and better, small steps at a time, you know, not everything all at once. So, all right, everyone, thank you so much. Great, great questions, great comments. And, yeah, if I am gone tomorrow and Friday, everyone have a super duper Easter if you celebrate that. And I will check you all next Monday. Thank you again for the questions, everything. If you're not in my world yet, go to my bio, click the link at the hypnosis session, watch the video I made for you, 3 Steps to Master Your Weight, and read the emails I send you. Okay. And, check out the motivation training I just made. It's 15 minutes. It'll knock your socks off. So I'll send a link out for that if you're on my list too. And, listen to the podcast. Podcast is Program Yourself Thin, and you can listen on all the major platforms and watch it on YouTube if you choose to. So, all right, everyone, thank you very much. Have a great day, and we'll talk soon. Bye.